This one right here, like if I look at it while I'm talking, there's no way in the world I'm going to be able to tell what time it is. You got me on, Aaron? Thank you. Good to see the Perkins. So you guys didn't go back, Mitch? You guys been up here? Do you speak English?
No.
Oh, okay. I haven't had Mitch time in a while. I had to get. The lesson is strength in suffering. And suffering is something that we need to define, because we often put suffering in natural consequences. If I, I'm very close to being diabetic, not very close, but I'm right on the line as far as like a pre-diabetic type of person. And so if I go ahead and just start gorging myself and make myself a diabetic, I can't really call that suffering. It's my fault. And so suffering, when the aspect we're looking at, they use Psalms 22. I'm not going to. That's Jesus on the cross. But we're going to be looking at Job mostly. And so we're looking at suffering in a dimension that oftentimes we'll never understand. And so oftentimes we'll never understand it in somebody else. What somebody else is going through is always going to be subjective, not objective, right? Something can affect me that wouldn't affect you at all, and you can't expect me to get over something that's affecting me when it wouldn't affect you. And so with the story of Job and his brilliant friends who so misrepresent God and put so many half-truths out there and accusations, we can see how not to support our brothers and sisters, and we can understand a little bit more about what God means with suffering, because that is literally a part of the body. And that's a revelation I've received of spiritual authority, etc., being gained just by people being willing to suffer, to bear stuff in their bodies. And you're doing that, taking up or what's lacking is what Paul called it in Colossians 1:24. What's lacking of the here, I'll read it for you. Did you guys know that was part of his calling, by the way? He said, "I'm glad when I suffer for you in my body, for I am participating in the sufferings of Christ that continue for his body, the church." And there is a powerful spiritual authority that is built with people that are willing to suffer and maybe never get an answer or maybe never receive their healing, but they bear that in their bodies and do not fail, and they continue in their relationship with God, and God uses that very powerfully, just the suffering on its own, but then the prayers, etc., that come from somebody that's willing to do that. Because it is absolutely a need in the body. Because there are some people that literally will not make it if they have to endure suffering. They literally can't. And so God needs people that can bear up under that. And so that's a part of the suffering that we don't really understand, because we want to believe that everybody's going to be healed. And we want to believe that this is a victorious life, that we're going to, you know, it's prosperity, joy, happiness, and all those attributes, which we can enjoy, but suffering is literally a part of us mirroring what Jesus the Son of Man did, so we can live by the power of his resurrection spirit, Jesus Christ, his spiritual body. We got to allow our natural bodies to die, to suffer, be beat up. So let's read what Paul's powerful calling was. Acts 9, just to let you guys know how much of the will of God it is for this kind of a thing to take place. It's verse 15 and 16 of Acts 9. I'm using the NLT today. But the Lord said, go, for Saul is my chosen instrument to take my message to the Gentiles and to kings, as well as to the people of Israel. And I will show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake. Thank you. That's awesome. That has nothing to do with what he was doing beforehand. Anything we do after salvation and everything we experience after salvation, of course, if we've been arrested, right, you know, like if we've committed a crime right before we were saved, obviously, it's not just going to be taken away. But I'm talking about the way God deals with us. Paul's not suffering because of what he was doing to Christians. It's literally the calling that God's given him, the grace God's given him to take a beating, to take a licking, to be constantly ostracized by his own people who he has such a desperate love for, and to actually just be always abandoned to where when he needs people to back him up, he's standing by himself. They all turned on me, all turned their back. No one stood up for me. And we're talking about one of the most powerful men of God that we have a record of, and that's Paul. And so suffering, there's many different aspects of it. We can't get deep into this because God's going to discipline us. And that's going to oftentimes, like David talking in his Psalms about how much he was being, how much the sin was eating him up. Was that Psalms 32, Gray? When he's talking about how much when he was trying to sleep and et cetera. And that's the conviction, but that's also, we get chastened, disciplined, just like children, by our Father. And so that's one aspect of suffering, is to get us back on track, to remove impediments of us. We're constantly in need of pruning. If we're going to be fruitful, we have to be pruned. So the most spiritual people in here should be the ones that are getting disciplined, suffering, pruned the most. We love to think it's the opposite way. The most spiritual people don't have any problems. They're just all powerful all the time. Everything's great all the time. And that's no. Absolutely not. But when we come into this curious case of Job, which is a curious story, which is very prophetic, actually, the many things that are spoken in the book of Job, there are so many types and shadows to Messiah, how the whole process would even work. When he's in Job 19, he's talking about seeing his Redeemer after he's died. He's going to see him it's powerful stuff in the book of Job, but, you know, we don't really know who the author is. We don't have a whole lot of information about a lot of that stuff, and I guess it's not important, so we won't let it be important. But he was very blessed. We know that. And so the first time that the accuser comes walking back and forth, and I thought he should be going like this back and forth. But it's very powerful. If you're, especially a husband, praying Job 1:10 over your family, very good. But what happens? Loses all his animals. Then here comes a fire from heaven, burns up all the sheep and shepherds. Third messenger, they stole your camels, killed your servants. And now your sons and daughters were feasting, and a wind swept in, they're dead. Job stood up, tore his robe in grief, shaved his head, fell to the ground to worship. I came naked from my mother's womb. I will be naked when I leave. The Lord gave me what I had. The Lord has taken it away. Praise the name of the Lord. Here's the most important part. In all of this, Job did not sin by blaming God. Is that our first, as human beings, is that our first instinct? To point the finger, blame, and what have I done for you, God? I've done so much for you, God. I've done so much for you. I can't believe that you would let this, or that you would do this to me, or that this is what I get for serving you, is you're going to cause something like this to happen. Job, in that sequence right there, did not sin. That sequence is over. Now we're in the next one, chapter 2. Same old process. Now he's like, skin for skin. If you let me touch his health, then he guarantees he's going to curse you. He's like, okay, go ahead. You just can't kill him. Which we understand the principle there, right? Is that when Satan has permission to do something or the ability to do something, he doesn't talk about it, he does it. So when he talks to you about what he's going to do, it means he can't do it, or he would do it. And so that's a very powerful principle when you're being tormented by him. It's like, oh, that means you can't do it, right, bud? Very powerful. So he does this. He gets, he struck Job with terrible boils from head to foot, to where he's scraping his skin with broken pottery, sitting in ashes. His wife, I'm not going to get into that, because she just lost everything also. But she says, are you still trying to maintain your integrity, curse God and die? Mitch has talked about that. What I really respect about Job right here is he said, you talk like a foolish woman. He didn't call her a foolish woman. He said, you're talking like one. That just shows you a little bit about what kind of a man Job was. Right. And how's that end? It says, so in all this, Job said nothing wrong in this version. The KJV would be, in all this, did not Job sin with his lips? So he's sitting there, and now his three friends go, we're going to comfort and console him. Yeah. Here comes Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. They see him from a distance. They tear their robes. They start screaming, crying. They sit on the ground with him for 7 days and nights. Don't say a word to him, because they see that his suffering is too great for words. You know, Gray, you preached on Joseph Sunday? I think the lesson even talks about it, but Joseph, Genesis 37, when his brothers betray him, his dad says he loves him more than the other sons. And Joseph has a couple dreams that he shares with his family. And they react, but he never reacts back. He shared it. They have their opinions, but he never says anything beyond that. They go, they're at Shechem with the sheep, and Jacob, for whatever reason, sends Joseph out there to check on them and then to come back and give him a report. So when he shows up at Shechem, lo and behold, nobody's there. They're 20 miles away in Dothan. And when you're supposed to be in one place and you're in another place, and the Jews would say you're partying down, Joseph did nothing wrong by talking about his dreams. But we made a doctrine out of, don't talk and tell people about your dream, because then that's what gets you put into captivity. How was he ever going to get to Egypt any other way than being put into captivity by his brothers? But his brothers, in their envy of him, their hatred of him, they are caught where they're not supposed to be. And he's going to be given a report to his father. And so we have no Bible to say that you don't say or share your dreams or this is wrong, but we love to preach that like a doctrine. And it's not true. So the same thing with Job. The end of the story is, this is what God says about him. After the Lord had finished speaking to Job, he said to Eliphaz the Temanite, I am angry with you and your two friends, for you have not spoken accurately about me, as my servant Job has. So take 7 bulls, 7 rams, go to my servant Job, offer a burnt offering for yourselves. My servant Job will pray for you, and I will accept his prayer on your behalf. I will not treat you as you deserve, for you have not spoken accurately about me, as my servant Job has. End of the story. So if we start criticizing what Job says here, well, he said, You haven't spoken accurately like Job has twice. Those three friends are dead if Job doesn't pray for them. God obviously is not going to accept their prayers. And so that's the end of the story. It's not whenever Job finally prayed for his friends and quit worrying about himself, then God delivered and took everything. No, those guys are dead if Job doesn't pray for them. It's a little different story, but we preach it differently. The Bible says it this way. And so when we're reading the book of Job, let's start. He's venting. He's brokenhearted. And so he whips out a bunch of stuff. So Eliphaz is the first one to speak in chapter 4. In the past, you've encouraged many people. You've strengthened those who were weak. Your words have supported those who were falling. You encouraged those with shaky knees. But now when trouble strikes you, you lose heart. You're terrified when it touches you. Doesn't your reverence for God give you confidence? Come on, Misha, why are you having problems sleeping? You're a child of God. Doesn't your life of integrity give you hope? Stop and think, do the innocent die? Yes. This is where you're starting to really screw up. Now we're starting to talk like good people never have anything bad happen to them. So that means you must not be a good person. That's where we're going here. And he gets the truth to him in a secret. Some spirit speaks to him. And he received it. Can a mortal be innocent before God? Can anyone be pure before the Creator? And he goes, if God does not trust his own angels, what? Like there's nothing to do with trust with God's angels. It's either you obey or you bye-bye. There's no trust involved. I say something, you do it. But he keeps going on, telling him what he should do or could do. But consider the joy of those corrected by God. Do not despise the discipline of the Almighty when you sin. And so he goes and breaks it down for him. And this is what Job replies in chapter 6. He says, if my misery could be weighed and my troubles be put on the scales, they would outweigh all the sands of the sea. That is why I spoke impulsively. If you're a real friend, that's when you hit the brakes and go, oh, he just needs to talk and vent. And I should just shut my stupid mouth and let him talk and vent. And it doesn't matter what he's saying. He's working things out because he's just had all this loss. But no, not these friends. These friends are super spiritual. And they know all about what it is that causing all this. And so this next one is going to come out, Bildad. Bildad would have got 3 sentences into this before I knocked him out unconscious. Chapter 8. How long will you go on like this? You sound like a blustering wind. Positive. Does God twist justice? Does the Almighty twist what is right? Your children must have sinned against him, so their punishment was well deserved. Very good. Very good. Very helpful. And none of this is what is causing what happened. Not the sin, nothing. But they're putting all these things in place. They're becoming Job's greatest adversaries. The greatest hindrance to him getting to peace, getting through this time of mourning, getting through this season that he's in. Here he has 3 adversaries who are wanting to just whip out things that aren't true, to twist what God is like or who he is, misrepresent him, and to just begin to attack Job. I mean, right there. Can you imagine telling somebody that just lost their kids that they must have sinned and they deserve it? But if you pray to God and seek the favor of the Almighty, and if you are pure and live with integrity, he will surely rise up and restore your happy home. Oh, really? And though you started with little, you will end with much. Okay. Verse 20. But look, God will not reject a person of integrity, nor will he lend a hand to the wicked. He will once again fill your mouth with laughter, your lips with shouts of joy. Those who hate you will be clothed with shame. The home of the wicked will be destroyed. Great. And so Job goes, yeah, I know all this is true in principle. And he's just trying to work through things here. He's really wanting to say, like, I wish I had an advocate, which he's fixing to get in the form of, I can't say his name right, Elihu, E-L-I-H-U, chapter 32 is when he shows up out of nowhere. Whose God is, capital H, he? If you want to know who he's representing there. Because he's asking for an advocate. I wish I had an advocate so I could argue my case before God. He's wanting to, and he's really pointing forward to the advocate we have now. We have an advocate with the Father. And so he's going through all this stuff, okay? And he's just saying, like, I'm disgusted with my life. Let me complain freely. That's chapter 10. My bitter soul must complain. And it must complain. If you have a bitterness in your soul, you need to get it out. And you're probably only going to get it out in prayer and in venting it out and talking it out. And eventually, just like with counseling, you're going to talk your way into the solution, not the idiot sitting next to you looking at you. You'll just come to your own conclusions because you're talking through problems. That's the magic of the counseling. They just get a degree so they can sit there and look at you and repeat what you say back in a different way, maybe. And make sure it's done in 30 minutes. But this is the thing about when we're really in a moment of time where we need to understand that we're human and we have we're stuck in between these two places. We're stuck in a human body, but our life is up there. It's hidden in Christ. So we've been baptized into him. Our lives are in him. And so we're this body here, we're putting it off more and more as we're yearning, and our bodies are groaning to be done with so we can put on this new body in the heavenlies. And it's a eternal and humanity. And we will never, ever understand the eternal in our humanity. And we will never truly understand what we are going through or suffering until it's over. And we might not even know then. And so there's those things that, like, when David talks about that he's quieted himself, weaned himself like a child's weaned of his mother's milk. And I don't try to think about things that are too high for me to understand. And that's what Job ends up talking about also. Like, I was trying to figure out something that's way too big for me to figure out. And if we try to figure out the whys and whats, we're going to get in a dangerous trap of going, well, I should have done this, or maybe if I do this right, and if I change this, and nope, it doesn't work yet, and I change this, nope, it doesn't work yet. No, we just need to continue going forward in God, understanding that God's doing something, but it's the weaker I get, it's the more manifest power of God that is able to flow through me. And there is a power, I'm telling you, there is a power, a very quiet, unbeatable power in somebody that can suffer and not allow the joy of the Holy Ghost, not to allow themselves to slip or fall, but continue going forward with God with that quiet assurance. And you might be beat up to where you can't even hardly raise your voice, but your prayers have so much more power than any of ours, because you're sitting there and you're suffering and you're continuing on with God. And there is power in that type of person that is willing to do that. And we don't have enough people willing to do that. We don't have burden bearers. I mean, we should have burden bearers every altar call, helping other people get some relief from their burden. But this suffering here, well, they're going to keep screwing up. I don't know. Okay, I got a little time. Let's move to the next guy then. Zophar, chapter 11. Shouldn't someone answer this torrent of words? Is a person proved innocent just by a lot of talking? Should I remain silent while you babble on? When you mock God, shouldn't someone make you ashamed? You claim my beliefs are pure and I'm clean in the sight of God. If only God would speak, if only he would tell you what he thinks. If only he would tell you the secrets of wisdom. For true wisdom is not a simple matter. Listen, God is doubtless punishing you far less than you deserve. Oh. So I have nothing left. My wife is wanting me to curse God and die. I'm scratching myself with these boils. I have the worst stinking friends in the entire world. And I've lost the thing that I feared the most. If I was going to make an assumption, he did sacrifices after every feast of his children, lest they maybe sinned while they were feasting. And if I was going to say any kind of a fear, it would have been that, because he obviously was very concerned with their lifestyle. And so he says, what I fear the most has come upon me. But he's lost his kids, he's lost everything, and you're getting far less than you deserve. Wow. Is that how God does things? No. Do we ever get what we deserve? And we definitely don't get what we think we deserve, right? Like, you should really think, like, you should really value me a lot more, God. I don't think you quite get it yet. So Job in chapter 12 goes, you people really know everything, don't you? He's over and over again talking about how terrible of friends they are. And then he keeps talking about wanting to talk to God. You know, this is a process that's going to play out over and over again, is we're going to go through things that we don't understand what's going on until finally we get revelation of maybe remove this. So maybe that's an impediment, my weight of running with patience, race set before me, Hebrews 12, or maybe it is like the discipline, or maybe it is just literally you are displaying and the showing the death of the body of Jesus through your body so that the power of God can be shown through you. And that might just literally be the only reason, or there might not be any explanation ever. But God is just. But that is 2 Corinthians 4 and 10. He goes, through suffering, our bodies continue to share in the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be seen in our bodies. There's some serious power in that, I'm telling you. There's some serious power in the weakness that comes with something like suffering in whatever dimension you want to put suffering in. That's what the Son of Man, Jesus, did. Hebrews 5, Hebrews 2. He learned obedience by what he suffered. The same suffered as what Paul is called to do. And that was part of what, when I had a prophetess talk to me about what, give me a word from God, which ended up being the word from God for me. She had said that I was going to be like Paul in the suffering aspect. And I'm not saying I'm going to be like Paul. I would never diminish the anointing God has on me by putting it on somebody like Paul. I don't like to limit myself. But you don't want to limit yourself either, right? All right. Paul, Peter, all them guys are great, but we're great also. In God, we're great also. He has something great for us. I refuse to limit myself. And so I've learned, that's why I'm telling you about the spiritual authority and power that you learn get through suffering, because that's what I've learned by revelation in my walking this out with God. I've learned to just bear up under something and not fight it. And just to endure through it until there's a moment when God gives me the ability to either defeat it or to come with much more authority and power, anointing, than I usually would in a ministry aspect because of what I've endured and gone through. And sometimes you just endure and your victory is just getting through the day. mind's not working, your energy's gone, got the foggy brain, whatever it is, if you just go through it, do not allow it to affect what your walk with God is. Don't let it make you doubt, like, I must not be doing good because I can't even like read enough to really study, or I can't. No, you just keep pushing through, and eventually you're going to get past it. Eventually you're going to get to the point where you can get some revelation from God, but you just keep walking and bearing through it, and that comes and that builds up and builds up and builds up to where next thing you know you have some serious spiritual authority that you don't even realize it, as much as when you walk into a place you can affect the atmosphere in a very quick manner. And that's been an experience for me, because I can go weeks with a foggy brain, you know, and then I'll have great moments where the flow is going and I'm just flowing. I'll stay up all night and steady in those moments, because I know that right around the corner, there very well could be another period of time where I'm doing a good job to like remember how to drink coffee. You know what I'm talking about, Mitch? I think Mitch kind of goes through the same thing at times, and it's just bearing through. But I'm getting sidetracked with Job. So ultimately, I'm going to have to stop. I guess ultimately, we get to the end after the Elihu comes. That's who he was asking for. He's basically saying, you were asking for me. I'm a clay vessel, like you said, that I want to talk to somebody that's not going to kill me like the Almighty. And so here I am. And now here, you guys are stupid. I'm young, much smarter than you, obviously, because I got the Spirit of God in me that makes it to where I can have more wisdom than you. And I've been sitting here waiting to hear you guys actually speak wisdom. And I'm very disappointed that you guys are so dumb. You don't. And you've done a terrible job. I can't believe you can't answer Job's questions when they're so ignorant. And so here we go, Job. Shut up and listen. I'll teach you some wisdom. And so Job shut up and listened. And then it transitions in Job 38 to God saying, gird up your loins, boy. We're going to have a little conversation here. And what a revelation Job gets. What a revelation. I don't see anything wrong with that whole entire sequence if I can get a revelation from God like that. Like, show me in the Bible another person getting a revelation straight from the voice of God like Job gets in those chapters, and I don't think you can. How powerful of a moment was that? Think about that. It's not a spanking, you know. It's not. I'm looking at it like, wow, what did Job see that he hadn't seen already, which he could see a lot, which he hadn't seen already. Remember, everything's destroyed. He never sinned. Never said anything. The next time with his body getting destroyed, never sinned with his mouth. Just does not understand, questioning. And then we get this dialogue, well, not dialogue. We get God asking question after question after question, but as he's doing it, he's revealing to Job just who God really is, just how big God really is, how powerful God really is. And that getting that revelation of how small I am, how big he is, how much I don't know, how much he knows everything, and that we just got to trust in God. There are situations that are going to come that you will not be able to fix, and they will not be because you did something wrong. They will not be because you did something right. There's going to be a reason God will probably eventually show you, but this is a walk by faith, not by sight. When's the last time any of you could say you did that? Because that's what we're supposed to be doing, is walking by faith, not by sight. When's the last time we did that? When's the last time we made a move that we didn't have figured out in our own human brain? Here's one of the biggest aspects of being of suffering, or let's call it testing with Job. Okay, we'll call it testing now. And you see it at the end here in Job 42. It's verse 11. It says, then all his brothers, sisters, and former friends came and feasted with him in his home, and they consoled him and comforted him because of all the trials the Lord had brought against him. So remember, the three friends came to do those two things, console and comfort. They did nothing of the sort. And oftentimes when we are in this dimension of being of testing, trials of our faith, and that whole purifying by fire, you will have all your friends mysteriously all of a sudden be out of contact. And you'll even try to call somebody to talk to you about what's going on, text them, and all of a sudden they're unavailable. That's another revelation we need to get, is the fact that God will separate us, and he will make it to where our friends, our family aren't around, and it's you and me, and so you're going to just be depending on me, and you're not going to get any guidance. I'm not going to allow you to from anybody else. And then when it's over, here they come, and now they're comforting and consoling him because the test and trial is over. And it wasn't because they left him. It wasn't because they were abandoning him. It was because he was in the process of God. And God said, I'm taking you to myself, and you're going to have to trust and rely on me, and I'm going to give you revelation about who I am through this test, this trial, everything that's going on, all the loss in your life. It's you and me, not even your wife. She's not part of the story after what she says, even though she experienced all that loss herself. This story is just about you, Job. Yeah. And what's it say in the New Testament about what's the ultimate summation about Job? It's James 5:11. This whole thing, what did this whole thing do for us? It says, we give great honor to those who endure under suffering. For instance, you know about Job, a man of great endurance. Great. So all that was for endurance. Gotcha. I mean, does that strike you as kind of like, what? Wouldn't you expect something else to be said? Like, he's the most righteous man in the entire world. He's a superstar. What resulted from this is that he became the most gifted preacher, blah, 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 in the world. It says great endurance. Patience, endurance is the themes that are mentioned in Romans 5, talking about the exact same thing, that the tribulation, whatever creates. Yeah. I'm going to have to go to it here. Problem with NLT and then with like KJV is then you start to join them together. We can rejoice too when we run into problems and trials. Verse 3, for we know that they help us develop endurance. Endurance develops strength of character. Character strengthens our confident hope of salvation. One thing we have to always keep in mind is that we are not living for this world. And so our treasure and our reward is not going to be found in this world. And so all the blessings of God are very great when we're living down here, but ultimately we're living for another. We're pilgrims in this land. We're aliens now. We're from a entire different world. And so if we're not receiving a bunch of blessings from God here, it does not mean anything about what's waiting for us there. And we can't view our blessings down here and base that off of how blessed we are as men and women of God, because we are not living for this world, and we're not guaranteed happiness. We're not guaranteed nice bank accounts, et cetera, et cetera. Here, we're guaranteed tribulation. He said, if I was persecuted, guess what, guys? You're going to be. That's what he said. Simple, John 15. And And so this is how I'll end with, when we're talking about suffering. This is Paul in Ephesians 3. Ephesians 3, 1. He says, when I think of all this, I, Paul, a prisoner, he's in jail, of Christ Jesus, for the benefit of you Gentiles. That's called a coming full circle in realizing this whole process of God, all the things you're going to suffer for my name's sake. He's realizing now that I'm in prison, and it's for your guys' salvation. And so he has got that revelation, and there's nothing that can shake somebody that has a revelation of their actual calling, and you're going to suffer many things for my name's sake. I'm in jail for you Gentiles. He actually says, in verse 13, do anyone have KJV? They can read real loud.
Wherefore, I desire that you faint not at my tribulations for you, which is your glory.
Oh. Is that a revelation or what? Yeah. Don't faint at my tribulations for you, because it's your glory.
Yeah.
Wow. That's where God, that's the process of God. You're going to suffer many things for my name's sake. Now he's at the point where he has the revelation of that aspect of it in prison there. Philippians 1, 29. This is the beautiful gift for the entire group of Philippians. For ye have been given not only the privilege of trusting in Christ, but also the privilege of suffering for him. In Acts 5, the apostles get beat up. Flogged is what they called it. Verse 41, the apostles left the high council after they got flogged, rejoicing that God had counted them worthy to suffer disgrace for the name. What's it say in the KJV? That's a mindset switch. That's not a thinking of this world. This world says, no, that's the exact opposite. Like, you're supposed to be blessed. Like, if I'm living for God, he better bless me. If I go, you know, like, do my little move, Pentecostal moves, we better not have any problems and everything. I better not get a flat tire. And if you do get a flat tire, it's probably not suffering. It's probably just you got a flat tire. When we all get sick at camp meeting, we might as well just realize that we're going to get sick at every camp meeting. We've got a bunch of stinking monkeys over there that, what are those called, that spread disease? Carrier monkeys? There's a bunch of carrier monkeys that come to camp nowadays. So we're just going to get sick. It's not suffering, though. It's just a matter that we're getting sick. I'm going to get sick at ministry's retreat every year. It's not because I'm suffering, though. I'm just getting sick. There's a difference between really suffering or really being tested or being in the fire and then just regular life. And if we can learn to separate those two things also and definitely not put that as a measurement of our success with God, because that's not a good, that's a very faulty measurement. Brother Norm knows how to do everything, so he can fix anything. And so when things go wrong with his stuff, he's able to figure it out and fix it. If I don't have all those skills like he does, and something happens to me, and we have to pay somebody to do it, it doesn't mean God hates me. It means like if I had the skills like Norm does, I could do it. But I don't have the skills like Norm does, so I have to do it this way. And so, you know, comparing ourselves, like the Denny's, you know, they have a better house than we do, and their grass is greener. God, like, why is our grass not as green? I mean, that's ridiculous, right? But we can compare ourselves amongst ourselves too much. But the worst thing we can ever do is what these three friends were doing. Three friends, I say. And that is, they were, like, I could kept going because they went, the two of them went three times, and then the one just went once, or twice, I mean, but every time they misrepresented God, they accused him, and they would twist truth. They would say things that were true and then twist it. And all of that is a trap for people, men, women of God, when our brothers and sisters are in this testing, trial, suffering, that we best shut our mouths most of the time. Not, it's all subjective, number one. So just because their pinky is hurt a little bit and they're acting like it's the worst thing in the world, it might be the worst thing in the world to them. And so I can't go, just come on, get over it. Like, it's no big deal. Like, you just had to shoot your dog. It's no big deal. Like, bury it. You know? Like, we can be so brilliant. And we become the enemies of God to the point that Job's praying for them or they're dead. They're sacrificing or they're dead. And that could easily become something that we fall into. Well, I think it's because you did this. It was really obvious you did this wrong. Well, I'm sure your kids... I mean, your kids are pieces of garbage, Brother Norm. I wish you knew that. Like, duh. That's beautiful. Thank you. That was so supportive. Yeah. Bill Dad would have been done right there. I don't care how sick and tired I was. Suffering is so supernatural that there's aspects of it we'll never understand. But it is so powerful because it is literally the dying of that body. So the resurrection power of Jesus Christ can be manifest through us. Yeah. Our bodies are dying. We want these bodies to die. Yeah. They're saying they're groaning under the weight in 2 Corinthians 5. We're trapped between these two places. And Paul's constantly saying, I would much rather be up there, but I'm benefiting you guys down here. But my body's like going, ah. And I'm desiring to take it off, put it on the new temple there of God. And that's the struggle we're in. And so the body, our bodies, this physical, the flesh, dying, going through struggles, trials, etc., has nothing to do with this. But we can look at it as it's exposing more and more of Jesus Christ. And so if you can bear under suffering, you will be one of the most powerful people that God has on this planet. If you can bear under it silently and just push through, I promise you, the authority God will give you to operate in. Both times, Job did what? Nothing. He didn't sin with his lips. Phew. What time is it? All right, we have church in 10 minutes.